minutes are cut off from you as to when it's time to stop TV. He
okay.
needs to see
you. He's right here.
Okay. After question and answer, then we'll... Is that one?
We'll keep taping until the question and answer. We'll tape the final question and answer period, and then we'll start duplicating the tape while we deal with evaluation, which will be short, and just final comments and discussion about the possibility of a high school conference, which we're looking at potentially next February. So by the time we get that completed, the tape should be, or the CD should be ready to be begin to be picked up. This next section is going to be scientifically accurate in terms of the time given. I don't even have to watch my watch because we've got a scientist speaking to us. So Joe is going to talk about high school math and sciences.
5 minutes?
Okay, over the years I've had more and more requests from parents and students who are looking to get official credentials for some of the academic courses that they are doing so that they can gain easy access to university or any other post-secondary. And I've always recognized that, especially in the area of math and science, a lot of kids will shy away from those courses because as homeschoolers, we tend to be a little bit isolated. Either physically by where we live or just because, you know, we're in our own homes. And it's tough with some of these more technical courses like the physics and chemistry and math to be able to work through that without some help and without someone to bounce ideas off of. So for a couple of years I've been thinking of somehow coming up with a way to help the kids transition from whatever sort of homeschooling math and science programs that they've done. And that's one of the problems, I think, as traditional homeschoolers, we like to do things our own way. But if we have children who are aspiring to do something that is going to require university, eventually they're going to end up in an institution. Not that kind of institution, hopefully. But if you drive them crazy, maybe they will. So somehow we have to be able to transition from whatever program you've been using in the past to be able to actually get the credentials so that they can move on to the institutional program of their choosing. So as a pilot project this year, we've started a little online group where we get together and we've for chemistry, physics, and math. And we've found some really good materials that have been published as some of them have been published as supplementary materials to that they're using in the schools, and other ones have been published. This one, the math, has been published by a retired math teacher who didn't like the math program that was being used. And so we're working through some common materials and basically providing a network of kids to be able to work together, and then once a week being able to get together online with myself as a tutor. So I've got just a small group this year as a pilot project, and we're hoping to expand that in the future. And so this is a way to help those who are wanting to go on to, you know, to get the academic credentials, especially in math and science, to be able to transition and do that in a way that really works effectively. I've got some books here you guys can take a look at later, but I think what's important is that we encourage our young people to challenge themselves. As Kelly said, she finally got the guts to challenge herself, and that's what made the difference. And I think we need to encourage our students, our own children, to challenge themselves and discipline themselves mentally and academically so that if they're capable of doing these things, the homeschooling community needs to provide engineers and doctors and scientists who are going to have the ethical and moral backbone to basically set things right in society. And so it's a shame, I think, that maybe more of our homeschooling students are maybe shying away from these courses that could lead to professions in those areas. What else was I going to say? Just one last thing as a advice from my own daughter, who's almost 21 now, who's been out for 2 or 3 years. When she looks back, she didn't do the official credential route. And looking back, she says, I don't know why I didn't. I did all the work anyway. You know, why didn't I go the extra little step, write the exams, and have those credentials? trying to get her into post-secondary institutions was possible, but it was way, way, way more work. Our second child now, Mark, did kind of what I'm describing here. And he has five senior-level courses, no diploma, but five senior-level courses. He basically took his transcript to an institution in Calgary, and in 10 minutes he was admitted. So if you're looking for the most streamlined way into an academic program, that's probably the way to go. So I'll be available after. I can show you the books that we're using. And if you have any questions now, I'll take them. Oh, well, just one other piece of advice. Again, from my daughter, she says to the young people, don't be afraid of doing these courses. Don't be afraid of the diploma exams. You know, if you're going to do the work, just take that step further and do it. If you're going to be going into a program that requires those courses, you're going to have to do it sooner or later anyway, so do it now. Get used to that. There's my bell. Get used to the discipline that's required to be successful in these academic areas. Okay, questions? Yes.
Emily tried to get on your online course and it didn't fit into our schedule, so it's still going?
It is, and we're hoping to be able to run it every year from now on.
Yeah. Okay. But she's still using the curriculum you recommended. So if they use the Castle Rock, for example, you think they can go from writing that to doing a diploma exam and they'll be successfully prepared?
Pretty much. Yeah, I would still, you know, if Emily can, if there's a way that we can kind of help, you know, get her integrated in with the group between now and June, I think it would help just to have some other people to bounce ideas off of and maybe spend some time. I'd be happy to spend some time with her on the phone or whatever and help her through areas that
wish we'd known that a
difficult.
Couple months ago. Am. And are the kids going to be writing diploma exams together? Like, how does that work for Wisdom students?
Okay. There's a number of different ways that you can register for diploma exams. The nicest way is if you know anyone who has a teaching certificate who is maybe on maternity leave or retired or whatever, that person can be. You can make arrangements for that person to supervise the exam in your own home or their own home, and so you don't have to write in a big setting with 100 other kids. But that's always a possibility. There are different places where you can go. Your local high school or the big centers like Calgary and Edmonton have writing centers where students can go to write the exams as well. But again, the nicest way is to be able to do it in your own home without distractions.
Do you still need to do it in the time frame?
Yeah. All the diploma exams have a specific date and time, and everybody in the whole province writes on the exact same time so that somebody can't write the day early and then phone their friend somewhere else and tell them what's on it.
Any other questions? If you know you have a question coming, maybe put up your hand while he's still talking so I know where to run.
We still have time.
I guess he wasn't very interesting.
If you decide not to go the route that you're suggesting, but do more the typical homeschool route like Saxon Math or Jay Wiley Sciences, is that good preparation in case at some point a student wants to challenge those diploma exams? And how do you go about challenging diploma exams?
Okay. Challenging an exam is kind of a misnomer. Usually, if you challenge an exam, that means you're going to basically go in and write that exam for 100% of your mark. As a homeschooler, they have the same advantage of kids in school. The work they do at home is graded, and 50% of their mark comes from that, and then it's averaged with the diploma exam for their overall mark. And so, if they've done something like Saxon, say that someone does the Saxon program right through to the advanced level. That pretty much covers, what's in the Pure Math 30. And what I would recommend is that they work through the key for Math 30 and just make sure that they can do the types of questions that these are old exam questions from previous exams. And so if they can go through here and write the practice exams at the back, that will give them a good idea of how well they're going to do on the actual final. And so you don't necessarily have to go through what I'm providing here. A lot of kids have done that in any course. They've done whatever they've done and then basically done some kind of preparation using the key is probably the best thing because it's actual old exam questions.
Where do we get that?
These are available through the LRC, the Learning Resources Center. The Wisdom office can order these for you. I think it's a little bit cheaper if you call through Wisdom. You can also get them at Chapters and places like that, but they're almost twice as expensive. So order them through Wisdom, and they can order them from the LRC. Castle Rock, the company that makes these, doesn't like individuals calling up because it's too inefficient for them.
My question is, what do you think of the Saxon Dive into Math CDs? Are they good for a type of tutoring and extra help in the math and sciences?
I'm not familiar specifically with the Saxon video series, but the Saxon math program is generally very good, and it prepares a student well if they do want to transition to write the Math 30 exam. I don't think it goes that high, but it's a good prep course because it really concentrates on logical thinking.
That was Singapore.
Yeah.
The students that I've had that have used the Dive CDs with Saxon love them. And the students who are having real problems in Saxon really seem to get a lift from that. So they seem to be effective.
And I've been told that the Singapore program does go up right to the grade 12 level.
Oh, it does now. Yeah.
What we found with the Castle Rock, that it's a homeschool program, but she still needs to use the J. Weil chemistry because there's not enough instruction. If you think about J. Weil's this big and these books are this big. And so J. Weil is an expensive program, but it's still a good resource for you to have in your homeschool library.
I agree. The problem with J. Weil is he's great at explaining the concepts, but his levels of questioning doesn't get into the mathematical application nearly as much as the Alberta program does. So that's where the students, they have a good conceptual understanding of the concepts, but when it comes to the more application type of questions, which is really heavy in the Alberta program, the kids fall flat sometimes. An example I like to give is I had a student last year who did the J. Weil chemistry, and he was getting 95% on all the questions in J. Weil. He started going through the key for chemistry 30, and he was getting 48, 45%. Luckily, he started into this about a month and a half before he wrote the exam, so he got himself up to about a 75% level, but it was still that much more difficult in the kind of level of questioning compared to the J. Weil. But I still would recommend J. Weil as a resource to supplement, to go with these workbooks that we're using.
Are we done? You guys are good on the 5 minutes, too.
I think we went over. If I can put in one more plug, though, I was talking about math and science here, but for a while we've been looking at trying to find someone who could help students prepare for English 30, especially in the writing component. And we found someone now who's willing to work with homeschool students between now and June to prepare them for the June exam. And so if anybody's interested in having their students involved in that, call the Wisdom office, and they, or if you, actually, my number is in any of the magazines, so you can just call me directly and either talk to myself or my wife, Diane, and we're trying to organize that all in the next week or so. Thank you. So it can be done in 5 minutes.
It can be. Well done. It was only 12 and a half in all, but that was their fault. Good questions, though, and we don't want to cut it that tight. I mean, people aren't a science. A bit about classical education through high school. How many of you know anything about classical education? Okay. You don't raise your hands very high. Okay, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail because I only have 5 minutes and these guys are all watching the time. But just to compare classical education with a modern education what we would call modern education, the school system. In a school, the teacher basically is set up as the person who has the knowledge and dispenses that knowledge to the students. That's the way the system works. In a classical education, the tutor, you never call them a teacher because they don't teach as such. They facilitate, really. But the tutor does not have the knowledge, but wants the knowledge. And the best tutor is the greatest student. Is the most inquiring student is the best tutor, because he wants to know at deeper and deeper levels what the truth is. And so the tutor, along with the students, if you will, are all looking to discover truth. And God reveals truth in his creation. And we only ever, no matter how wise we become, we only ever perceive partial truths. But every time we discover truth more fully in our life, and that really should be the quest of our life, we come closer to understanding God. He's created this beautiful situation for us, and that's what a classical education is. Now, interestingly, this classical approach to education began 500 years before Christ. So it's certainly not Christian. And the people who developed it, the Greeks, knew nothing of Hebrew. Well, they knew something of Hebrew culture, but they didn't believe in God, in our God, didn't have revelation at all. But they discovered through reason much of what revelation has taught us. So they discovered the truths about life and death. They discovered that God exists and that God is one. Even though the Greeks had many gods, the sense of God was a universal sense. There were a lot of truths that they came to, albeit imperfectly, that by reading their works, we can come to a greater, especially enlightened by a Christian revelation, we can come to a greater perception or greater awareness of truth. That's essentially what a classical education tries to do. It's worked for hundreds, 2,500 years. It's only in the last 100 years that we've ended up with a situation where we teach students through a different method. And I'll just talk about the trivium. You see, classical education isn't so much about what you study, it's about how you study. And you do have a handout, and I hate to give references, because they almost always make recommendations about what to study. And you look at anybody who's written a book on classical education, they always tell you, they always have the recommendations as to what you should study, which, yes, those are good resources, but the principal truth of classical education is the way it happens, not specifically what you study. The first stage, the grammatical stage, it's traditionally called, it's also called the learning stage or the memorization stage. It's a stage up to about the age of 11 years old where a child memorizes very easily. They're like a sponge and they memorize very easily. So that's where you teach them rote memorization things, poetry, memorize anything they can. Memorize the times tables, grammar, all the basics of language and numbers and of life. Interestingly, that stage in our system ends up carrying all the way through university, and students end up getting information, regurgitating it, and putting it on a multiple choice exam, doing their, you know, their bachelor's program at university, and all through high school. And it's no wonder that students, when they get to junior high, go, what's wrong with this picture? Because at the age of about 12, they've moved into the logical stage. So the three stages. The first is just the memorization stage. Second is logical. Suddenly, they start to become much more aware of the world around them, and they want to know more about the world. They become far more inquiring. And they want to know that it makes sense. And they want it to make sense for them. They need to talk to an adult, because they want the logical mind of an adult to impact their rational thinking. They desire to be logical. The problem with our system is we continue to teach them in the grammatical mode. Here, memorize this, do this, and answer these questions, as opposed to, what do you think? And read what Aristotle thought about that. And it's really captivating. And it's very much about the things that I think. Is that 5 minutes already? Okay, I quit then. Well, seeing is that. The third stage is the rhetorical stage, that's high school. And at the most of this handout is about the rhetorical stage, and there's a lot of stuff in here that you'll be able to glean. But really, it's sometimes called the community stage, because that's when they want to make a difference in the world. And you look at young men and ladies, and they don't want to just be a bump on a log. They want to make a difference. And that's built right into us. That's the way we're wired. First, we want to memorize, then we want it to make sense, and then we want to make an impact. And that's the rest of our life. It's rhetorical. And so we need to learn how to express ourselves in ways that we can make an impact, to be poetic, to be musical, to be articulate, to be dramatic, to be whatever we need to make a difference in other people's lives, to be able to know our faith so that we can spread it, so that we can embrace the world in positive ways. That's the rhetorical stage. That's the high school stage. And the question came earlier, when do you start an online program? We started the online program simply because there were parents who said, well, great, I believe we should be doing a Socratic dialogue. Socratic dialogue simply is what I talked about earlier, where the tutor is the greatest inquirer, and you just inquire together until you discover something, some truth about what you're reading. But the time to go there is when the student goes, I'm not going to do regurgitation of information anymore, I want something different. And usually that's 12, 13, 14. It can be anywhere in that range. There, questions? Get going, will you?
Hi, yeah. At the beginning of your speech / lecture there, what would you recommend as the best schooling technique, like the classical or the modern?
Well, wasn't it evident from what I said?
A little.
Do I have to start all over? Yeah, I think a classical approach has endured for 2,500 years because it works. It would have died hundreds, thousands of years ago if it didn't work. But all the great minds of history, you know, the people who created wonderful masterpieces and great cathedrals and beautiful literature and art, did so not by going to grade school and regurgitating, but by thinking and discussing and then becoming expressive themselves. So yeah, it's endured because it's the way to go.
Point does science have to, you know, that you have to focus on the science and you have to focus on the math and you have to do all the things that they think that they're going to need to get the credentials to get in. I mean, yeah, it's really great to be rhetorical, but how do you combine the rhetorical with the academics and be able to do it all?
Actually, good question. Thank you. In fact, being rhetorical, remember, I didn't talk about content. I talked about process. You can be rhetorical in math and science. In fact, what Joe is talking about with Jay Weil, The thing that makes his chemistry program good is the fact that he is rhetorical. He gets you thinking about the concepts, not just about the science, the math of it. Now, of course, at some point, in order to get into medicine, you're going to have to do the math. But I would say do that after you have your education, your basic education. The problem with our system is we think, 18, out the door. Our son didn't leave till he was 20. And I wouldn't have wanted him to leave any sooner. And he wasn't ready to leave any sooner. Because we need time to, and the system as it's created, we can't use that as a model. You know, 18 years really isn't enough to be able to get a good classical education and the credentials you need to go on to other study. So take the time you need. But 2 years after 18, between 18 and 20, you can learn a lot of science and math. But really, if that's the way you're going, you really should have been doing that in a rhetorical way much earlier.
Now, this is a question for the whole group. I can't help but agree with Paul about the five areas there on the back of the sheet. I hire people, and that's what I look for when I hire people. That's the only thing. The one question I do have is that when you're trying to evaluate your kid, when I hire people, I got some people that are mechanically very good, but paperwork, it's terrible. There are certain aptitudes that people have. What's the best way to measure your own children's aptitudes? You tend to be too subjective at home sometimes. You need an objective approach to really figure out what are my kids good at? Is there a test, or what would you gentlemen recommend to test?
So we're into general question answer now.
I would say one of the best ways to measure what your children are good at and who they are is to listen to what other people say about them. And actually, it's interesting. I've heard people say things about my children and said, who are you talking about? And they said, I'm talking about your children. And we actually sometimes don't see them very clearly. We get pretty jaded. People will tell you what they see in your young people. And usually it's accurate.
I think some other ideas that you might consider are what brings your child energy? What brings your child enthusiasm? What makes them come alive? What is it that they have passion for? Clues from their experience, you've seen them in different settings and environments. What brings them satisfaction, even if it is very hard, even if it is extremely tough? I think there's a few other things, too, that you might want to consider here. I'm barely limited at that, though.
Are we done with classical questions? Because what we can do is go to Randy's presentation now, and then we'll do the general Q&A. Fair enough? So Mr. Kopp is going to talk about redefining high school completion, which is something that we're trying to get Alberta Education to look at, too, in the big picture.
Well, I'm glad John gave a little prediction how hard it is to wait. I've had the privilege of waiting to share some ideas, and it's good to be last to sense that. I'll get right down to the point. For most people in Alberta and in Canada, when we speak of a high school education, we generally mean finishing grade 12 in high school and obtaining a diploma that verifies having earned 100 credits. This type of education is usually completed so that a student may enter the world, of course, of work or further his or her education by attending a higher institute, college, university, technical institute. To me personally, this view is limited. It, in my opinion, is actually layered with our strongly humanistic culture today. And it continues to reject, in my opinion, the truth that's found in the scriptures. Let me illustrate my point bluntly. I'm quoting from a gentleman by the name of Christopher Schlecht. He wrote an article about our roots. This is what he was reporting on about G. Stanley Hall and John Dewey. Anybody ever heard of those guys? Well, let me introduce them to you. At the turn of the century, Granville Stanley Hall was championing his recapitulation theory using social applications of Darwin's work in biology. Hall suggested that individuals evolve through some stages through which human history has evolved. The child repeats the race, he wrote. This is a great biological law. Hall associated infants and toddlers with savage periods of human history. He consequently counseled parents and teachers to leave their young children to nature and encourage play, which fosters motor development. A crisis transition period led to the pre-adolescent years of 8 to 12, which were likened to early pygmies and other savages. I'm quoting, these children could be drilled and disciplined in school. He claimed that another period of crisis came at adolescence, which he deemed the most critical period in one's life. In 1904, he developed his greatest work, a two-volume tome entitled Adolescence. It's psychology, relations to physiology, anthropology, sociology, sex, crime, religion, and education. Hall viewed adolescence to be the most important of his dubious stages, so important, he believed, that teens ought to be separated from those older and younger than them. Moreover, like most evolutionists, Hall also taught that each generation is or should be superior to the previous one, and therefore needed to break free from those which precede it. In practical terms, this thinking has come to mean that rebellion is youth's destiny. Hall and many other social psychologists after him, even continuing to this day, viewed this rebellion as a positive thing. In short, G. Stanley Hall invented adolescence. John Dewey, Hall's most renowned follower, applied these theories to the public school system. Dewey, considered by most to be the father of modern public schooling in America, taught a generation of teachers and school administrators through his laboratory school for progressive education at the University of Chicago. Dewey's prescriptions were implemented in schools all over the country. Ours too. In order to isolate this crisis period of adolescence, he created high schools to segregate teens from other children and from adults. Need I say more? Therefore, I would like to appeal to you to earnestly and honestly seek out and redefine what a high school education really ought to mean. To anyone who claims to know Christ, I would challenge you, what are you doing? At the very least, this question needs to be asked. Is my child being prepared to carry out the responsibilities that God has designed him for or her for? For me, personally, it has to start with God. It has to glorify God throughout that child's life. And it has to be under the primary instruction of his or her mother and father during those critical developing years. Thank you.
We can go right out. As soon as we're done with the question period, the general Q&A, we will we'll get the final CD burning there, and then we'll deal with some information as to how you can access a lot of the things that were quoted here tonight and that sort of information. So stick with us, and we'll tell you more. But let's just go to general Q&A. If there's anything that you haven't had answered or something of Randy or something that's been touched off. John's back there, too. Mark had to leave to pick up his son who's writing his... Was that the GED he was writing? Yeah. But John, you could come on down. Any questions? This could be an easy run. Well, you need to speak into it.
I just want to thank each one of you for contributing. And as facilitators, you've been around to a lot of families. You've had a lot of information that, you know, you've shared tonight. And I really like the new ideas. You know, I like, Joe, your initiative, what you're planning for high school. That's going to serve a lot of our kids. And I like the apprenticeship stuff being researched and made available to us, and everything that everybody's saying. And I've been homeschooling for 12 years. My oldest is 21. And it's been different for all of them. And I just want to thank you and bless you for what you've shared.
I was just wondering, Randy, what was the name of the book that you were quoting?
The gentleman's name is Christopher Schlecht, and he did a critique of modern youth ministry. Location is Moscow, Idaho, and it's Canon Press, 1995. Actually, I have a copy of it up here, if you want to see it. S-C-H-L-E-C-T.
Just like it sounds.
I'm not sure if you can answer this question, but do you think it's becoming easier for our homeschool grads to get into post-secondary institutions and colleges in the province of Alberta, now that homeschooling has been around for at least one generation of high school grads?
I've had a few students get into some of the most difficult programs, and they have really done a good job of promoting and showing post-secondary institutes how well we can do. But the students that are most successful are really very well prepared. We need to do our homework. I think for the most part, students that are aiming to go to university and they've developed the strong academic skills and they're bright young fellows, they go on and they do very well. And those among us, among our children that go on, they do very well. But I think was it you, Joe, mentioned how there might be quite a number of young students that are very capable that maybe shy away from the challenges, the academic challenges, and for that reason they never take up that torch. And I think maybe that's a little sad, because when I compare the students that I work with here among the homeschool crowd, there are so many that are so able, that would be able to do so much better than many of the successful public school students. But maybe they shy away from it, you know, for one reason or another. So I would encourage you to, just to continue doing your best and have your children try to rise up to that challenge.
If I could add to that, I can't speak to how well homeschool-educated children are being accepted in Alberta colleges and universities, but I can speak a little bit to how they're being accepted elsewhere. Our oldest daughter went to university in Virginia, and many universities and colleges in the States are now not only welcoming homeschooled students, but they are recruiting them and providing partial scholarships, because they realize that homeschooled students are not only academically very well prepared, but they're also socially very well prepared. These are the students who become student leaders on campus. And as I said, they're not only welcoming homeschooled students, they're recruiting them.
I don't have any data to say that homeschool students are being accepted more readily in Alberta, but just my sense is that the post-secondary community has still not really accepted or embraced homeschoolers in general. And I think because it's very threatening for them, in order to embrace homeschoolers and to accept them is undermining everything that they believe in and the system they work in. So I don't see a widespread acceptance. There's certainly been lots of students that have been accepted and they've been successful. You know, the other thing is there's no consistent policy. If homeschoolers were that important to post-secondary institutions, I would think they would develop a policy that was fairly consistent to receive them, and they haven't done that. And they're, to my knowledge, there's no plans to do that.
It depends on the institution. Taylor has got a written policy for homeschoolers, so does King's.
Yeah, what I'm saying is there's no consistent policy across public
post-secondary.
I'm talking about across the province. Individual institutions do, but there's nothing that's consistent between them.
No.
Right.
Perhaps we should not be focusing so much as an easy way to get in to an institution, but maybe trying to create an environment where that spark does take place and the student really wants to be there. And once you've created that, just give them room.
There are so many students out there that do have that ability, and for one reason or another, I think maybe they shy away.
And I think it just comes down to, have you done the work? Not the work. There is no sort of a set of the work. But if you can show, even if you don't have official marks, if you can show the kinds of things that the student has done, and show how well they've done at it, the students that can show that are getting in, and I've had dozens of people get into all kinds of different programs, and it comes down to doing your best and making sure if you want to get into this program and that program requires these courses, you know, if you want to do the Alberta course and actually get the official government transcript, that's fine, but you can still do it with other ways, and as long as you can show them, then there's usually a way to get in, although it might take a little more effort and more time on your part to invest in that to get them in.
Are you satisfied?
And post-secondary institutes, they are looking at not just marks anymore. They're putting more. They're valuing more the portfolio. They like to see a mature student, a student that's involved, a student that's excited about their course of study. You know, a student that demonstrates leadership. It's not as much all about marks anymore.
You can see how our facilitator meeting's going. The greatest blessing of my life. I think we'll call it there. We'll let Mr. Fast go and start burning that final disc to make copies.